Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I am all in.
I am all in with Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. Scott Patterson, I Am All In podcast, 111 Productions, iHeartRadio. We are here with Jason Kravitz, who appeared as Dwight in season 3, episode 5, 8 o'clock at the Oasis. He was the new neighbor across the street who came over and asked Lorelai to water his lawn and then mow his lawn and then go inside his house and do all kinds of things. Very memorable character. And Jason has an extraordinarily long and distinguished resume, and we'll get into that later. But let's get into the Gilmore stuff. Jason, thanks for coming on. Welcome. Good to meet you.
My pleasure. Hey, good to meet you too.
And,
thank you.
And we thoroughly enjoyed, all of us, the team enjoyed your performance. It was side splitting funny. and that was the only episode of Gilmore Girls you did, but it's so memorable. How did you get the role?
It was just an audition for a role. And, you know, the same way you get a lot of jobs in this business, your agents put you up for a role, you audition, and hopefully you get the part. In this case, it worked out.
Good, good, good. We actually would have loved to have seen more of you. So what do you remember about being on set?
Oh, well, I remember, you know, working with Lauren, who was really nice. I enjoyed working with her a lot. And I remember immediately, first thing as I got onto the set, I was told by the script supervisor, fast, go fast, don't miss a word, don't add a word, don't do anything. Okay. And the first take I did, I do remember, the line had some, I mean, you're forgiving me, I don't remember the line exactly, but it was something about, and I turned the corner and there it was. And I believe I said, and I turned the corner and boom, there it was. And I cut, no boom. Do not add a beep. Do not add a sentence. Do not add a clap. Nothing. It's got to be very specific. Of course, that's how Amy Schumer Palladino writes her stuff. And I totally respect that. I just had no idea until I was on the set that that was going to be the case. So that's my overarching memory. And also the fact that, you know, being in Stars Hollow and being around that set was really phenomenal, actually.
Right. Yeah. It's a nice place to be. It was a nice place to go to work. It was great.
It was great for the time I was there. I have a fun Stars Hollow story, though, a fun Gilmore story that will come into play with people who know this actress from other Amy Sherman Palladino things and the second Gilmore Girls incarnation. A few years after I did this episode, I was in LA doing a pre-Broadway run of a musical called The Drowsy Chaperone. And The Drowsy Chaperone starred Sutton Foster.
Oh, sure.
Who, of course, at that time was a Tony Award winner for Thoroughly Modern Millie. And she also eventually was on the lead on Bunheads, Amy Sherman Palladino's next show, and then appeared in Gilmore Girls, the reboot. So, but she was just a big Gilmore Girls fan at the time. And I was staying with, we were all staying in the same area. And I was still in touch with the people at Gilmore Girls, especially one of the casting directors. I said to Sutton, do you want to go on set? I'm sure we can get on the Warner lot. I just call my friend Jamie, who is Jim Rudofsky, one of the casting directors. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'd love that. So I got to bring Sutton Foster to Stars Hollow. Huh. And I've never seen anything like it. She looked at the world around her the way that people look at her now, who are fans of Bunheads, who are Broadway musical fans. And she was really dumbstruck by the whole thing, and she got to meet Lauren, and she was really nervous. And it was just one of those really magical moments to be in that place with somebody who was such a huge fan of the show.
Wow. Yeah. That's, it was overwhelming for me, and I was in the cast. So I know what you're talking about.
There you go.
So the tone and the banter that you had with Lauren, it was really, really perfect. How much did you get to rehearse that with her before you would shoot?
Very little.
Right.
We shot pretty quick, as you know, they move pretty fast on that set. I think, you know, having seen the show, you knew exactly what to expect in the way of rhythm. So even though I'd had my little, you know, mistake early on, it was easy with Lauren, who was such a professional in the situation and was very accepting. And we just kind of hit it off very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very little rehearsal. We just kind of swam right into it.
Do you get recognized as Dwight when you're out in public?
I really do. And the first time that happened to me, I had forgotten name of my character. You know, it was years and years later, and it happened about 4 years ago in New York City. I was going through Macy's, and somebody who was like temporarily working for the holidays stopped me and said, "Oh my gosh, it's Dwight from 8 o'clock at the Oasis." And I said, "Who? What? What are you talking about?" She goes, Gilmore. And like, you couldn't have been, were you born by that point? Because she was probably 20. And she said, "Oh my gosh, I just watched it again. Oh, I love that show so much. And you're Dwight. Oh my gosh." So, and then since then, I've gotten stuff, since it's been back on the air, you know, wherever it's been playing, it's get a lot of recognition for Dwight. It's really amazing.
Have you ever met anybody like him?
Dwight?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, Amy's characters exist in a kind of a hyper real world,
right,
in some ways. I don't know anybody who talks at that pace, but somebody who's that fastidious and somebody who's that also, what I loved about this character is clearly the character's supposed to be a bit of a nerd. You know, he's got this fascination with tiki things, and he's got very specific watering of his plants. Mm-hmm. And he's gone through a divorce, and yet there's something super confident about him.
Right.
You know, he was happy, very, you know, gregarious in meeting his neighbors and smiley and something really positive about him that you don't usually find in characters that people write that are more nebbishy, really. So I found that really fun. Yeah. Great.
So you've done a lot of work on TV and Broadway, most recently in Be Positive, NCIS, and The Undoing. very diverse. Do you have a favorite genre of work that you've done?
I really don't, because I think when I was a kid, I just wanted to do everything. So I wanted to be really adept at everything, and I wanted to be able to do everything from song and dance to you know, Shakespeare and Moliere and dramas on television. One of the shows that I was most known for early on was The Practice, where I was a lawyer for 2 years, and you know, very mean lawyer. But I had come from the world of comedy, so it was right. Like I was loving the opportunity to sink my teeth into anything like that. So I really kind of like doing it all. If I can, if people give me the opportunity.
So you're writing as well, you're doing comedy, you're doing all kinds of things. Are you always creating? I mean, it's just you wake up and this is what you do.
I think that, I get really juiced by doing the creative things. This business as a business is so fickle. And even I feel like I do have a bit of a decent track record, a good resume, but I go long periods of time without getting the opportunity
right.
to audition for things or participate in the business. So I'm constantly looking for ways to either entertain myself or entertain other people.
Right.
So I think that's been part of my life, is just being creative.
So you've had 3 decades of experience.
What's the
secret for your success? What is it?
You know, it's so funny. It depends on, of course, how you measure success, right? Like the fact that I've lasted 3 decades is pretty much a success. I recently found out that I'm at an age where I can start possibly collecting my pension, and that's the first moment in my career I felt like I made it. I made it. I can retire if I wanted to. It's amazing.
I know.
Because at certain times you really do feel like you're retired. I think longevity is what I consider successful. It's the fact that I'm stuck around. And I think you have to be able to deal with rejection, or at least you have to be a glutton for it. You have to understand. It comes at you all the time. And I wish I could say I handled it really well all the time. And I still don't. But I think it was instilled in me early on that what I was doing had value. More recently, that it's had value beyond just for my own self-entertainment and you know, self-worth. Mm-hmm. But value in the world, that there's people appreciate having entertainment and creativity and someone doing that that they can look to in darker times. So I think recognizing that what you do has value, and I think I was taught that early on, and even though I've wavered and up and down, and it's been a core belief, I think. So I got very lucky to have a family and relationships and mentors and friends that have buoyed that at times when it's wavered. So that's been helpful.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was studying in New York, I lived in New York for a long time, and I did all my training in New York. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that was instilled in me that I'll never forget was what a privilege and what an honor it was, and what a calling it is to do this as a profession, and that what a responsibility you have. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. But it does take a tremendous amount of dedication, and the rejection. Yeah. I used to take it personally until I stopped taking it personally and realized it was just a business decision on the other side, and that right. you can't take it personally, cause it'll just eat you alive and there'll be nothing left.
How old were you when that happened though?
You know, I'd come from a career where it was just so much rejection and heartbreak that I had a pretty thick skin coming into this. Mm-hmm. What I had was a work ethic, and I was late to the game, so I really needed to play catch up. And that's the thing that put me over the top, was the work ethic.
Well, what's funny is I had a similar, I felt like I had was kind of coming from behind in a lot of ways. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, and I went to school down there to an undergrad program. I didn't go to grad school. I worked in theater. It's a fantastic town for doing theater, and I was able to get all my union cards down there. But I had really had no plans to move. I was all set, and then I had enough people tell me, you know, you really should give this a shot, that I didn't move to New York until I was 28, thinking, okay, the business is here for the offing. You know, it's like, it's all on the table. I've been working in D.C. I'll just pick up right here. And of course, that doesn't happen. So I had to learn to hustle. But
exactly,
there were so many people who had been there ahead of me, who had gone to grad school, who were already working on Broadway, and I was not able to get an agent. And it took until I was in my early thirties and moving out to LA before I started making any kind of noise. But it was really my own hustle that did that. I ended up writing a 2-man sketch comedy show in New York that got nowhere here, but took it to LA and just lucked into getting the right people in the room and heading off to the Aspen Comedy Festival. And then I suddenly had an agent and I suddenly had a career. Mm-hmm. But it was, again, you know, it's the hustle. It's
right.
It's knowing that you got to hustle.
But it's creating your own content. That's the hustle.
A lot of my life has been creating my own content.
But that's what they look for. That's what they want to sign. You know,
that works for me in that scenario. But, you know, but I felt like I was playing catch up the whole time too. I felt like everybody else has got an agent. Everybody else is younger than me and has been signed and is working, and I have nothing. Right. So I had to really scramble. But that's part of the deal. The problem a lot of people have is they scramble when they get here and they hustle, but they don't create. They hustle. They try to connect to the agents and the managers, and they're not really producing anything.
Right.
And I think that the ability to kind of like know that I had to follow that path as well was gave me a little bit of an edge. Who knows? Or maybe it's the nose. I have no idea. No one knows for sure.
Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or taking your morning coffee to meet the morning sun. Really, any meal tastes better outside. Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. You can be the host with the most and the least worries. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So now we're going to get into your resume, okay?
Uh-oh.
It's extraordinary. So let me just read this off, okay? And and everybody in the audience, take note. This is a real privilege to read this off for somebody that has this diverse a resume and has been this successful. Film credits include Chinese Puzzle, The Stepford Wives, Sweet November, Morning Glory, Laura Gets a Cat, Accommodations, My Dead Boyfriend, What Just Happened, and an animated feature film, Bling. Kravitz has appeared in several Broadway shows, including the original production of Tony Award winning The Drowsy Chaperone, the 2003 revival of Sly Fox, directed by Arthur Penn. We need to talk about Arthur Penn. but the City Center Encores production of The Golden Apple, Relatively Speaking, An Evening of Three, One Acts with Ethan Cohen, Elaine May, and Woody Allen, directed by John Turturro. We have to talk about John Turturro. Along with comedy partner Joel Jones, Jason's two-man sketch show, An Evening with Kravitz and Jones, took home the jury award at the 1999 U.S. Comedy Festival at Aspen, Colorado. We have to talk about Aspen, Colorado. The show is based on material developed from long-running Rumble in the Red Room Collective. As a writer, Jason penned a 10-minute Green Eggs and Hamlet. Will you please tell me about that? There's more, but I'm a Hamlet fanatic, a freak, my favorite play, my favorite character. What is that all about?
I've had many things I've done on a dare, and I think somebody said, I came up, was joking one day with somebody about Green Eggs and Ham, and I said, oh, should do Green Eggs and Hamlet. And somebody said, you should write that. And it's a 10-minute play that starts with, you know, there was a sad fellow named Hamlet the Dane, and all he would do is complain. And then Hamlet says, I come back from college, my father is dead, and my mother has married my uncle instead. She's sometimes my sister, and now is my queen. More kin, less kind, if you know what I mean. And it just goes on. And the ghost comes out and says, would you, could you, with a knife, would you, could you take his life? You know, and it just, you know, devolves from there into this farcical 10 minutes of, like, Dr. Seuss rhymes and people getting killed by eating poisoned breakfast foods.
I mean, that is just, you know, because, listen, I no longer do, but when my son was very small, I would read him nothing but Dr. Seuss, and there's nothing more brilliant, as people with children know. It's all iambic. It's Shakespearean. Seuss is the Shakespeare of children's books. Gosh.
Yeah, but my son, on the other hand, my son was, when he was a baby, his mother was rehearsing for the role of Titania, and I at one point I said to him, what does daddy say? And he said, daddy says, I love you. I said, what does mommy say? And he said, mommy said, these are the forgeries of jealousy.
Oh my goodness. Oh my God. Holiday stories, the holiday stories, the Kvetch and Christmas Bullwinkle.
Yeah, Bullwinkle was the Christmas story.
Christmas story.
Yeah, we wrote that. My partner and I, Joel and I, wrote that for Universal years and years ago. It never got made. I don't think we even own it, but we do every once in a while we'll do a charity reading of it. And again, you know, it's all bad puns and non sequiturs, if you know Bullwinkle. And then the Kvetch is a parody of the Grinch, which is, again, it's the Hanukkah version of the Grinch and Dr. Seuss rhyme, which I love to write in. So
Wonderful. Yeah. You graduated from University of Maryland. You perform extensively at the Shakespeare Theater, Roundhouse Theater, and Woolly Mammoth Theater Company. Wow.
Yep.
Tell me about your love for Shakespeare. How did you first experience Shakespeare, and what was the first character you had to break down and play that you performed in?
In high school, when I was doing a summer school for the performing arts, I was told by a long departed, wonderful mentor of mine who was teaching that summer that I should try Puck. And just the monologue, just doing, you know, If We Shadows Have Offended. And I got it. I was like, oh, this makes sense. And then in college, I studied, I did some more in high school, you know, did the mechanicals and did Mercutio and little touches of things. But then when I got to college, I was a freshman and I had an upper class teacher, a professor for upperclassmen who was leaving. And he took a few of us underclassmen and said, I want you to study Shakespeare with me because I think you guys should try this. And we did a lot of studying the John Barton acting Shakespeare tapes at the library and learning how the vocabulary worked and how the pentameter worked and what that told you about characters, getting informed by the words. And it was just one of my favorite things to do. And then I had one teacher in college. We did Love's Labor's Lost, and we did it in a park in Washington, D.C. We rehearsed it. I shouldn't say we performed. We performed it at school, but we did one rehearsal in a kind of a manicured park in Washington, D.C., just to give a sense of surroundings. And that led to, I did some Shakespeare after college as well, but I also did this one project that I just came up with, again, you know, doing creative things and finding all of your love for things converging. I did something called Shakespeare in the Rough. And what I did was I got a bunch of actors together and I cast The Tempest, just randomly with actors that I knew from DC. And I said, we're going to do a 2-day event. On Saturday, we're going to meet and read the play. Now, anybody, there's no director. So if you want to stop and say, I have a question about that character, or I have some thoughts about, or I've seen a production where that character did this. Doesn't matter who you are in the play, you can comment on anything about the characters. And then the next day we went to a nature preserve in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And I mapped it. I gave everybody a map of the surroundings. I said, go find where your scenes take place, but don't rehearse them. Come back and we'll map everything out, the order of the show, where things take place. We'll have lunch and then we're going to go. And we're going to go do one scene to one scene. And if you're in the scene, you should take off so we can discover you in it. But otherwise, you can watch. We didn't have an audience. We performed it for each other. We had musicians. We had just, it was, and I said, just improvise it. But you also are not responsible to anybody. You're responsible to the text. That's it. You don't have to perform it for the other actors. It can be like a television performance. You can even think the lines if you feel that's the case. Of course, everybody's on book. Everybody's holding the script. I said, you can do whatever you want and just, you know, and I saw that play come to life in a way that I've never seen it since. Mm. And it was just, I mean, literally the people in the shipwreck scene that starts The Tempest, literally one of them brought a little dinghy and put the king and the king's son in the dinghy. And they all went up to the lake, into the lake that we were near, up to their chest and screamed the lines at each other while they had people throwing buckets of water at them from the shore. I mean, it was like, I didn't plan that. But people, when they're given the opportunity for the freedom to create, it's, you can watch it explode.
Right.
And I just, that's one of my favorite experiences, even though I had very little, I mean, I played Caliban. I had my fun doing a character that I usually wouldn't get cast in. But watching the creativity of people that I adored as performers anyway, just watching them have the freedom to just go, it was I mean, that's probably my best Shakespeare experience.
Right.
Is that
discovering the rehearsal process is far more interesting and valuable
and
fulfilling than the actual performances.
Yeah. Oh, I really felt like if I was to direct a Shakespeare play, my first rehearsal would be that.
Right.
Give the actors first crack before you tell them, here's what the set is, here's what the costumes are going to look like, here's what the theme is, and you're all going to fit in the box that I created in my mind. I'm going to start with letting them play because they're going to give me things to discover that I would have discovered otherwise. So I haven't had a chance to do that yet, but maybe someday.
Oh, God. You're making me miss New York so much. summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or taking your morning coffee to meet the morning sun. Really, any meal tastes better outside. Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. You can be the host with the most and the least worries. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so when I was, I had a teacher in New York named Sandra Lee, and I don't know if you know who she is, but she's one of the great ladies of the theater, right? And she encouraged me to go audition for the Actors Studio. And long story short, 6 weeks of rehearsal with my scene partner, we went in there, they stopped us after a minute and a half and said, thank you very much. Went into class, did the scene, learned a lot, you know, went back, did it again, got shot down after 3 minutes. So it's really hard to get in, but I was an observer. I was allowed to be in even the playwright director sessions, which Arthur Penn ran. I was exposed to Arthur Penn for a couple of years Tuesday was the acting, Thursday or Friday was the producer director unit. And Paul Newman would go to both of them and comment. And it was extraordinary. Tell me about your experience with Arthur Penn.
I wish it was more exciting. Arthur Penn, he directed Sly Fox. The production originally starred Richard Dreyfuss with Bronson Pinchot and Bob Dishy and Eric Stoltz, amongst many others, and including René Auberjonois, dearly departed René Auberjonois. Now, I think René had the idea to do the show, and I think he brought it to the producer, and he brought it to Arthur, and the producer said, this is great, except we can't cast you as Sly, the main character. We need to cast somebody else like Richard Dreyfuss. So I was not in that cast, but at a certain point they were doing a replacement cast on Broadway. It was my first Broadway show. And they brought me in and said, I auditioned, and then they said for, you know, this part called Craven the Lawyer. And they said, after I auditioned, they said, okay, we're going to offer this to you. And I said, that's fantastic. And they said, have you seen the show? And I said, I haven't seen it. And they said, okay, go tonight. And Arthur said, but don't pay attention to what anyone's doing, because they have ruined the play. They've gone too big. They've stretched it out. Just don't pay attention to what anyone's doing. And I said, all right. Peter Scolari was in that production. Boy, he was, God loved it. You know, and rest his soul. He was talented in a way that nobody else was. He was a brilliant comic and clown, but yeah, he could what they call stomp and feather. You hit the joke and then you just make the laugh last longer and longer. He was the master at that. So I saw what Arthur was talking about. And after the show, I went backstage and I saw Renee and I saw a few other people. And they said, are you doing the show? I said, yeah, I'm coming in to replace Bronson. So playing that role. And Renee says, when you're in rehearsal, don't listen to anything that Arthur tells you. So picture me, this is my first Broadway show, and I'm getting Arthur Penn telling me not to pay attention to them, and they're telling me don't listen to Arthur, and I'm just like, I just have to be here. But then we spent 3 weeks rehearsing. Richard Kind took over for Richard Dreyfuss, and Bronson actually took over for Eric Stoltz, and Larry Storch came into the project, Carol Kane, Dick Libertini, another great actor. And I was just surrounded by these masters. And, you know, Arthur was very stressed about the whole thing. I think he was unhappy and he was trying to rein it in.
Right.
And I took the bus with him one day uptown, which was kind of like, oh, it's Arthur Penn. It's Bonnie and Clyde. It's here we are. I'm just riding the bus with him. Right. Crazy.
Right.
So it was a great experience for me. I don't know if it was a great experience for him.
Right.
I had a good time.
So that was 2003. How old was he at that time? He must have been pretty old.
I don't know. He was was pretty old. He was kind of nearing the end of the career.
Right.
That might have been one of the last things he did.
John Turturro.
Yeah.
I first time I saw John Turturro was at the, God, what was it? It was the, it was an Italian-American reconciliation with Laura San Giacomo and John Pankow.
All three performers who I love.
Did you see that? Did you see that play?
I did not see that.
He was extraordinary. It was extraordinary.
He's one of my favorite actors.
Oh,
he's gotten to prove it over and over again, especially in the last, you know, five, seven years. I mean, when he did The Night Of, when he was the detective in The Night Of, he was fantastic in that. And then recently in Severance, I just, you know, just watched that, and boy, what a, he and Walken together just give a fantastic, fantastic performance. So he's a really nice guy, and I definitely count him as a friend. So I'm glad to see him constantly busy.
Tell me about your experience at the Aspen Comedy Festival.
Well, that was another one of those remarkable coincidental moments that you get. You know what they say, the luck, what is it, the crossroads between persistence and opportunity, right? That's what luck is. So I was very persistent. I was working on the show in New York, in this two-man comedy music and comedy show. And we went to LA just on a whim. It was like, look, you know, we've got friends out there who want to see our show. Let's go out there. There's this one agent that may be interested if, you know, I can invite her. And it just so happened that it was at the exact moment they were doing the finalists, the final judging for the Aspen Comedy Festival for that year's Aspen Comedy Festival. So this must have been the fall of 98. Like around right between Thanksgiving and New Year's, maybe, and Thanksgiving and Christmas. I mean, and then we just did our show, and we got Mark Hirschfeld to come to the show. Mm-hmm. Mark Hirschfeld, casting director for Seinfeld, and then on to head of comedy casting.
I know him well. Yeah,
you know who he is. So he came to the show, and he said, "Look, we're doing final casting. Can you throw together an hour-long version of this for Saturday? Because we only have Saturday at like 4 o'clock because we're seeing comedy people at 5:30 downstairs." It was at the Improv. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they had that upstairs at the Improv, upstairs behind the parking lot. And then they were going downstairs to see comedians after that. Mm-hmm. So we said, okay, we threw it together, and a quick turnaround, we ended up getting invited to the festival. And it was overwhelming because, as anybody who hustles, and I'm sure you have, knows, when we were putting our own show up, you're pounding the pavement to get people, not just you know, agents and comedy people. And you're getting anyone to come see your show, audience, just so you have people in the seats. It's such a process. And you're doing your own costumes, and you're doing your own costume changes. And it's all very bare bones. Right. Well, you get invited to the Aspen Comedy Festival. Their audiences are sold out ahead of time. You're going to have 250 people a night, no matter what you do. Right. You're going to have people backstage helping you. You literally have people backstage with oxygen masks because you're an Aspen, and if you come off exhausted, they don't do that. So we were like, unbelievable. We're here given this, you know, great opportunity. The cast of Second City is being celebrated at the festival. So there, we've got Eugene Levy, and we've got, you know, Andrea Martin. We've got all these people in the audience that are like heroes of ours. And it was like 0 to 60,
right.
You know, 2 months before that, we were upstairs at the Improv, like in a black box, like basically running our own lights and sound as we did the show.
Right.
And after that, it was great to be there, but I think I was so, we had come from New York. I didn't know anything about LA. I was only 4 years in New York at that point. So I didn't realize the magnitude of what we were doing and who exactly was. It was one thing to say, well, the cast of SCTV is here. It's another thing to say, well, the head of development for ABC is here, or Castle Rock, or, you know, you name the, mm-hmm. the production company. Everybody's there looking for the next thing.
Right.
We didn't know that. So when we got back to LA, our agents were pretty small potatoes at the time, and they didn't know what to do with that. So instead of, we had a lot of meetings, we called it the couch and water tour, because you'd come in, they'd say, would you like a bottle of water and a seat on the couch? and that's what you would do. And what we didn't do was, oh, you know, pitch a sitcom idea, you know, give them something to work with us on. They just, you know, they just, so at the end of the meetings, they were like, this has been great. Have some more water.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. The water is the consolation prize. You know, it didn't go well when they're offering you more water on the way out, because you're not going to get any farther than that. But we had no idea. We were so naive. And by the time we figured it out, that wave had crested and dropped. So I was very fortunate that I was in LA and was able to audition for a few things and end up getting some decent roles and starting a career from that. But I think if we had been smarter about it, or at least just more knowledgeable about the business, we could have had a lot more bang for our buck. But as it was, the Aspen Festival itself was just a dream come true.
We have time for one last question. I could talk to you all day. First of all, no, I have two more questions. Did you ever get down to the Wooster Group and see Elizabeth Klomp's Willem Dafoe stuff? You never saw that stuff?
No, because I was in D.C. in the D.C. area until 1995. So the Wooster Group was still doing. I did see one thing they did was long after Willem Dafoe was, you know, in Hollywood and not coming back to do stuff. So,
right.
It was very, a lot of that great, organically unique pieces in theater weren't happening at the same way. Yeah. Shanae was here. I think there were some great venues downtown, you know, to get to and see crazy, interesting stuff. But the heyday of that in the late 80s and stuff was just long gone.
Yeah, that's when I saw it. What would you give if you were to give advice to a young actor starting out? And I know there's always one thing I tell everybody when they ask me, what would your advice be to young actors starting out as far as what to study, where to study? Because I think that's the most important thing. It's not, you know, when people ask me, hey, should I move to LA? And I'm like, who have you studied with? What do you know? You know, what do you love?
That's changed for me over the years. Right. So, you know, if you would ask me 10, 15 years ago, I had one answer, you know. And then I learned that how you succeed in this business, the very simple answer to that is, I don't know. Because nobody knows.
Get into professional wrestling. Then you got a shot.
Why are you not working right now? I don't know. Why did you get that job? I don't know. Because nobody knows. Even the people doing the casting, even the people making the final decision, they don't really know how the business works, because the business is never consistent. Everybody thinks they know, and then it changes.
Right.
I always say to people, make sure that you don't let the creative muscle atrophy. You've got to be doing creative things that have nothing to do with getting work or making it in the business or making money, because otherwise your soul will dry up. So make sure you're constantly, like, even if it means just going to a museum, just be creative in some way, somehow. But I think the biggest piece of advice now for young people is get connected to other people, because those are going to be your people. And as you go forward, those people are going to be doing things and you're going to be involved in those things. And then you're going to do things and you're going to have your tribe to call on. Mm-hmm. And as you guys, as one person gains success, you will be more connected to a wider portion of the business.
Right.
So there's so many ways to be creative now that is also potentially ways of getting seen.
Right.
I mean, obviously there's things like TikTok and YouTube, but there's also a million other things you can do to get involved in the business. And there's no excuse for not getting involved in some way. But take classes. In a way, I understand your point about, like, you know, who you're studying with. That's really important for you to learn a lot of the craft, and you should learn the craft. You should also learn the skills. As you know, I'm sure it's like there's a different skill set that goes along with doing a commercial audition than an on-camera audition, than a theater audition, than a television audition or a film audition. There's very different skill sets you have to understand. And that's something you can study. You should study. But get yourself involved with other people, and the connections you make are the thing that can make that, that's going to make you have a career. That's going to give you a career. It's who you know.
Mm-hmm.
It always is the same in every business, really. But I'm beginning to think that's the real key to this. Just connect yourself. Connect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a community. That's
the
for
best
sure.
advice I got.
It's definitely a community. Jason, it was a pleasure having you on.
Oh, my pleasure. Listen, you know how actors hate talking about themselves. So, you know, it's a difficult thing, but I think we got through it. You
know? What are you doing right now? What are you working on right now? You got something coming out? What are you doing?
Yeah, I have a show that I'm doing that I've been doing for about 5 years now, a little more, called Off the Top. And it was just an idea I had that's blossomed into a really bigger enterprise. It is a completely improvised cabaret, by which I mean people write down suggestions ahead of time at their tables at the theater. They all put these, I'm performing at Birdland right now, but they take their suggestions, put in a fishbowl, and then I come out and I basically sing songs based on whatever suggestion I pull from the fishbowl. And that could be a song called Eat Your Vegetables, or it could be a song called Your Via Is Here. And I have a band and we make up the songs and the story as we go along.
Are you in New York right now? Or are you based out of LA?
Right now. Oh. I'm based in New York at the moment, but I've done the show a few times out there at Vitello's, you know, right. Einstein's at Vitello's now. Right. Birdland here in New York is my current home. I'm doing the show this Monday, the 16th at 8:30. And then I'm taking it over to London for two shows in London.
Oh, fantastic.
And so that's kind of been my kind of side gig right now. My side hustle has just been putting together this silly, fun,
entertaining music
and comedy.
Terrific fun. Oh, my God. I want to go.
Get on the plane. It's
my God. Oh,
I'd say keep your mask on, though. That's just, you know, on the flight.
I know. All right, Jason. Good luck with everything. Tell people where they can tell people where Birdland is and when you're performing.
Birdland is Birdland Theater is at 44th Street in near Times Square, between the 8th and 9th Avenue. It is Monday, May 16th. At 8:30 p.m., you can get your tickets at www.birdlandjazz.com. I guarantee it'll be a fun night. That's all I can tell you. I have no idea what I'm going to sing. I have no idea who the character is going to be. I have no idea what the story is going to be. But it's usually a lot of fun. At least it is for me. I hope it is for you too.
How long is the engagement? Does it go on or is it limited?
Just a one-off this time. Just a one-off on the 16th. And then hopefully I'll be back again in the fall or next year. You know, whenever they can schedule me.
All right, everybody. Get out there. If you're in the area, go see him. Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Jason, all the best. Good luck with everything. Good luck with the London shows.
I appreciate that.
And hope we got to have you back on. There's so much more to unpack. I didn't get the half of the stuff I wanted to talk about.
I'm here, man. I got, you know, give me a call.
All right.
I'm here in London.
We will.
Okay.
Good deal, man. Good talking to you. Good meeting you. All the best to you, my friend.
Nice to meet you as well.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
Bye. Everybody, and don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. Grade one specialty coffee.
Summer, the best time of the year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there was another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. At IKEA, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, they have all of the essentials that you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.